All right, guys, we do have a speaker tonight. I'm delighted to say they're going to share their experience, strength, and hope with us for 40 or 45 minutes, whatever they're comfortable with. Their journey to, into, and through Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm going to hand you over to Helene, who's going to introduce them. So, Helene, over to you.
Thank you, Steve. Hi, everyone. I'm Elaine. I'm an addict. Hi,
Hello.
Elaine.
Helene.
Everyone in service. It's my really great pleasure to have asked this person to come and share with us. I met her in a morning meeting that I used to attend really daily, and so I've heard her share a couple of times, and maybe for a main chair on a JFT, and I had the pleasure to meet her at the convention last year, London convention last year, and go to a sound bath together. And recently to speak with her, well, she invited me to speak with her and to open up these difficult times. But I'm so happy that this person is coming to share with us. I'm so curious to know about her story. I find her so inspiring, and I was trying to think, all day, like what is the best, what can I give as the best introduction? And yeah, I mean, this person is so kind and gentle, but I think what was coming up as I was tuning into it earlier on was how this person, all these times that I've met her through different things or creativities that we connected with, it's these beautiful spiritual principles that she seemed to just embody. And I know that she's going through some things like, life on life terms, and she remains grounded in grace, and I find her so inspiring. So with no further ado, Gwyn, come and share with us. Thank you so much for coming here.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much, Helen. What an intro. Hi, everyone. I'm Gwyn. I'm an addict.
Hi, Gwyn.
Hi, Gwen.
Oh,
Welcome.
hi. Thank you so much. Oh, my gosh. Do you know what? I have been so nervous about sharing today. And just listening to those readings helped me land in my body and feel a part of, and hearing everyone chatting before the meeting. And then that beautiful introduction from Helen just helped me to drop into my heart. So I'm just so grateful. I'm so grateful to be here with you all, and for you all being part of my recovery today. Yeah, welcome to anybody who is new and struggling in the room. I've been where you are. In fact, I just turned last Saturday, I just turned 4 years old. 4 years. Which is just, when I first came in, the idea of that, I remember people sharing about birthdays and getting milestones, and it felt like such a long way away, such an unachievable thing. In fact, I wasn't really even sure that I wanted to stay clean when I came to NA. I just knew that I couldn't go on the way that I was. And I wasn't really even sure that I wanted to be in the world anymore. And I thought I'd just give this a bit of a go. Maybe it might help me stop for a little bit, and then I could start using successfully again, whatever that means. And here I am, 4 years in, learning how to live life on life's terms, one day at a time, without the use of drugs. And I can't do that alone. Can't do that on my own, and the brilliant thing about this program is that I don't have to. Yeah, where do I want to start? Yesterday I was watching a film with my kids, and even just that sentence 4 years ago would have felt absurd. These children have been a real gift of my recovery. They are 8 and 12, and I have become a co-parent to them over the last couple of years, and they are one of the biggest gifts of becoming clean. And yeah, we were having a chat about imaginary friends, and a younger one who's 8, Indy, I was like, do you guys have any imaginary friends? She's like, yeah, I have a unicorn. I have and a unicorn wears a satchel, and the satchel there are five fairies. And she's just like, she's so lives in the world of the imagination. And then our 12-year-old was like, no, I didn't have any when I was growing up. I was just alone with my thoughts in the dark. And I love that. They really do kind of represent for me the duality of what I was like as a kid. In fact, I had two imaginary friends, and fantasy was the first thing that I used on because being in the real world just felt too difficult for me when I was growing up. And I had two imaginary friends. One, they were both French because I thought that French was infinitely more exciting and mysterious. One was called Elizabeth, and she was like a real goody two shoes, a real people pleaser, a real perfectionist. And then there was Camille, who was like a total punk badass, always getting in trouble. And obviously, she was my favorite. And every time that I did something wrong or made a mistake or broke something, I would blame it on Camille. And that kind of good girl, badass punk duality kind of followed me all the way through my using up until the age of 39 when I came into the rooms. I'd been sort of performing this role of having all my shit together. And then I'm just looking at that photo of me, and someone said before the meeting, it kind of looked like I was staring out of the bars of a jail cell. And that's kind of how the end of my using felt to me. I was wandering around the world performing this happiness and competence and staring out of this invisible prison that my addiction had trapped me in. Lies, cheating, loneliness, isolation, surrounded by people, but feeling utterly separate, and desperate and just longing. Longing for connection. And I'm so grateful that I'm not in that place anymore. And when I came in, I just felt like fragments. I felt like in pieces. I had didn't know who I was. And I was so lost. And I couldn't stop using. I mean, just for the newcomers, because I can get really excited and about the recovery part and lost in the story of it all, but like I could not stop using every single day, and I was going for days without sleep, and I was like pissing into a pot that I kept underneath my broken bed because I was so terrified of my housemate hearing me using through the night that I didn't want to like go up the stairs to use the loo. And yet at the same time, like put on my makeup, put on the face. It was during lockdown, and go on Zoom and have meetings, using offline, just the insanity of it. My God. I can feel it viscerally in my body, what that was like. And the reality was that I felt like I needed every single one of those drugs in order to survive, in order to get through to the next 5 minutes, 10 minutes, hour, day, make the phone call, don't make the phone call, leave the house, don't leave the house. And I couldn't imagine living another way. NA's given me another way. It's given me another way. And yeah, I don't feel like I'm looking out of those prison walls anymore. And that's not to say that fear doesn't still come up for me. It really does. I get scared every single day. And I remember hearing in a meeting once somebody saying that fear and faith can't exist in the same place. And for me, I don't know if that's true. I mean, I was thinking about that this morning because every day I write into what I'm scared about. And my fears are, my fears when I was out in the madness were like, running out, not having enough, not getting enough, being found out. And then the core ones that I've kind of discovered through recovery have been like, not being enough. people being angry with me. That was another thing that someone was chatting about just before the meeting started, and I so relate to that. Like, I think the one thing that's more uncomfortable than sitting with my own feelings is sitting near somebody else's. And yeah, particularly anger. I find it really hard to be around other people's anger. And that's something that in recovery I get to learn how to detach and learn how to keep coming back to myself and learn not to react from my first place, which is kind of a little bit like my imaginary friend Elizabeth. So, like, I need to control, I need to appease, I need to smooth everything over, I need to make sure that everything is in harmony around me so that I can be okay in the inside, so that I can feel safe. And yeah, like, for me, that is so much family of origin stuff. And in my, this is about to go out all over the place. There we are. This is where we are. That's my brain. And that's okay. I, in my step four, which I started thinking that I had zero resentments, that I had never been through anything in my life. And I heard stories of unimaginable trauma and abuse, and that hadn't been my story. And so I came into the rooms thinking that there must be something intrinsically bad in me. I was the rotten addict, worse than anybody else, because I had no reason to use. And yeah, in my step four, just the revelations of gently peeling away my layers of denial and fantasy around what my family dysfunction had been, and how much, seeing where that little over-responsible kid was born, that overload responsibility. And I have so much compassion for my family today. My dad grew up in a family that was, with a very abusive addict father. And my mum grew up in a, also in a family where it was not safe for her to feel. And so they were just passing on the memo that had been passed to them. In fact, they were doing a pretty incredible job of switching it up as best that they could. And it is true to say that I grew up in a house where it was not safe for me to feel my feelings, and that, I had grown-ups around me that weren't accountable for theirs either. They didn't have the language to say, I'm scared, or I'm angry, or I'm upset. And so it became my job as I witnessed it. And that is something that I kind of, at the age of now 43, I get to feel when that stuff comes up for me now and be like, okay, we're just going to keep coming back to our body. These are our edges. That's not our job. And detach. And yeah, that's where the healing happens for me. What else do I want to say?
Sure.
Yeah, I guess, like, going back to this little family that I have now in recovery, and the opportunity to do it differently, do it differently from the way that my parents had, because I have a new script now, and I do it imperfectly, and but I have a new script because of recovery. It gives me a chance to, yeah, just to model something different in this family. And it has been incredibly difficult. I've been walking through a lot of grief at the same time as forming this family with my partner and his kids. One of the things that I was the most scared about in my using was that a repercussion would be that I wouldn't be able to become a mother in the way that I always dreamed I would be, by having kids of my own, like, since I was really tiny. And yeah, that's come true for me. I, in my second and third year, a lot of that was going and getting fertility tests and walking through that journey. And I remember looking at those test results and, the goody two shoes side of my personality, feeling like I had somehow failed the test of being a woman because I was unable to have kids, and the shame that came with that. And then Shame is always for me anyway. I mean, shame's my go-to. It's my absolute favorite. It's like a comfortable groove that I go to. But underneath that, when that had moved aside, the grief, the grief of letting go of that dream. And I'm thinking about the no what, matter what, because actually at no point during that journey did I want to pick up. And all of the times that I felt like the feelings have been too big and might engulf me, I have had somewhere else to go. Whereas before I would call a dealer, I have these rooms, I have a beautiful inner circle of people in this program who will hear me share. Exactly. Sorry, that's my puppy getting excited because I think my partner's bearing. Thanks, B. I'm just gonna go in the other room. 1 sec. Just somewhere that I can go and not have to feel that alone. And every day, since getting those results, I prayed to feel the feelings and to have help to just kind of like survive that, and also to want the things and be present for the things that I have in my life, which today is like so extraordinary that I have these two kids, and I am a Gwyn in their life, and their trust is one of the biggest gifts that I've got in this program, and I get to be a safe container for their feelings because I have learnt to be a safe container for mine. It's really magical, that journey of learning how to reparent myself whilst learning how to be a parent at the same time. And the fear for me at the moment is, I find myself in quite a lot of financial fear. I don't know where my next mortgage payment is going to come to, and I realize that it's a privilege even to have a home, like such a privilege. And my partner's recently given up his job, and we've taken on this like new creative adventure. And I'm in and out of so much fear of, doing something new. And when I'm in that fearful place, I'm just in all of my defects, like all of those little scared kids inside me that feel like they need to control everything, just start shouting at me. It's like a committee of children in the morning. Like the martyr, here I am again. I'm probably going to have to be responsible for everybody. And the rescuer, like I want to just go and get 5 jobs in order to support the entire family. And there's also, I guess, the naughty imaginary friend that I have, Camille. I want to fucking go and start smoking. I want to blow my life up. I don't want to pick up. I don't want to pick up just for today, but I want to escape. I want to run away, because as well as feelings being something that I use on like myself and others, uncertainty is such a big trigger for me. Being comfortable with uncertainty, being okay with the unknown is such an ongoing journey for me. And my imagination, which I absolutely love, is just in planning, predicting. I want to know what's happening tomorrow, what's happening next week. And that's why I need to keep coming back to the fact that this is a just for today program. And that meant in the early days, I don't have to pick up just for today, which was sometimes like more than I could manage, more than I could manage one whole day. Sometimes it was just for 10 minutes, just for half an hour, just until the next meeting, just until the next phone call. And when I'm in this heightened state of anxiety, I am, just remembering that just for today applies across all areas of my life. I don't need to map out my entire future. I can just wiggle my toes. Here I am, feel my edges again, keep coming back to now, keep coming back to the next right action, the next right thing, keep turning it over, keep praying, keep meditating, keep writing into love, and trusting that I will be okay no matter what. You know, that was another slogan that I heard so early on, no matter what, we don't pick up no matter what. And recently I've seen some of the people closest to me walking through unspeakably hard things. My friend who I celebrated my 1 year with in Belfast is walking through the thing that she has been most scared about her whole life. She's just lost her mum, and they were really close, and seeing how held by love she is because of this program is such a privilege. And one of my home groups is in LA, and so that's kind of, you know, people's homes burning down and watching people in the program coming and bringing their fear into the rooms, having a space that can hold that for them so that they can go out into their communities and just be walking through this unimaginable kind of fear with so much grace and so much care and humility, and being these pillars within their own communities is so unbelievably humbling for me. So no matter what, I don't pick up no matter what. And I feel like what's really helpful for me to remember is like for me, I believe that I am in the care of no matter what. And what that means to me changes day to day, really. When I first came in and people talked about higher power, and I was really scared about that, and I was really scared about step three. I kind of felt like I would need to make this decision to turn my life over, do it perfectly once and never take it back, take back my life and my will ever again. And that's kind of really not been my experience. It can be a real daily practice for me. And I would hear the Serenity Prayer, and I had no real idea what it meant then, but I would just sit at my piano and play it and just feel held by the space between the notes that I played. And yeah, then I'd come into the room and listen to the message here, and I would hear what became my higher power in the rooms, love being spoken, the spiritual principles that Hélène mentioned when she was introducing me. Hearing honesty, vulnerability, integrity, courage, trust, listening for that when I didn't feel like I could access it for myself, and being held by that because I'd come to the rooms. Like when I share, it's like I turn my will and my life over to the care of all of you, like no one individual, but you're like a kind of lattice of love that holds me and helps me feel like I'm going to be safe. And even if I was to lose my house, I would still be in the care of that no matter what. So that feels really helpful to say out loud. What else would I like to? I'm just going to pause, and I can feel myself getting a bit speedy, and just invite my higher power to come in. And yeah, I think one of the other things that I'm scared about at the moment is my energy, is my capacity for things. Because like that was one of the main things that I used to control and use on in my using days. I'd feel a bit tired, and I'd use in order to give myself energy and show up in the way that I imagined people needed me to be. And then, you know, and then come nighttime or come the second night, I take something else in order to help me sleep. And so learning to kind of understand my capacity and my energy levels and ride those waves in recovery is like an ongoing process for me. And I get very easily overwhelmed. That's the truth of it. Like I went into a supermarket just before coming onto this meeting and just felt utterly exhausted within like 45 minutes. And I'm on a journey to understanding how much of that might be to do with my neuro spiciness as well and sensory overload. But yeah, that's definitely something that I am anxious about as I am stepping into this new phase of my I guess my recovery and my creative life by taking on this new charity venture in my new, there's lots of news in there. New. Lots has changed, guys. Lots has changed in my new hometown. For a while now, I've been praying and asking my higher power to show me how I can use my creativity to be of service for my community here. And like historically, because I've always really loved my work, but historically it's been so bound up with my using, and workaholism was like so much a part of my story too, that I am finding like new ways to, yeah, to kind of to work and be with my work in recovery, I guess. And so one of the ways is just to ask my higher power to come in and co-create and show me and guide me with opportunities. And it's been my experience that little opportunities have come exactly when I've been ready for them. So, you know, a few months into recovery, I was given a tiny job just to go into the forest and make something with a bunch of kids, which is exactly sort of where I was in my head and in my recovery, was in that place of something really small. And then I kind of, as time progressed, I asked to be in service of things that were happening in the world. And then this beautiful project came in that spoke to refugee experience. And now I've been, you know, asking for a way that my creativity can serve my community here, because I've actually been feeling quite lonely in this new town. Because so much of my recovery is online, and I'm so grateful for that. I'm so grateful for the flexibility that that gives me. I'm so grateful for the recovery community that I've met online, a few of whom are in this room now, people whose voices are so much a part of that loving voice that counteracts the meanie gremlins that manifest as my addiction. Yeah, but as a result of that, I haven't really embedded myself with the recovery community here in, I live in Weston. And I haven't really found my community yet. But with this new sort of charitable venture that we have, I'm really hoping that that will bring me a way to both be of service to the people around me and to find that connection, that one, that person to person connection that I've been craving and wanting for quite a long time. Yeah, it's interesting, my relationship to like wanting things in recovery. I find it difficult to know whether I'm allowed to want stuff, because when my addiction is like bound up in that stuff, it's like that one is too many, a thousand is never enough. That was the same with drugs and with anything, right? So I want it, I'll have it. None of that is enough to fill me up. So I want more, 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 more. I've heard people describe it as a disease of more, and that was absolutely my experience. And it could hook on to food, people, work, sex, drugs, all of it. And so how to ask for things and want things in a way that is kind of aligned with the way that I want to live my life is like an ongoing journey for me, because my disease can also deny me stuff. Low self-worth is absolutely a part of my stuff. So am I allowed? So, you know, I can also restrict myself in terms of like I'm, you know, in terms of food, in terms of going out, in terms of social isolation. And so, yeah. I guess that's definitely something that I'm on a learning journey with. How can I want and ask for things, or invite and allow stuff into my life? And I think that's where, yeah, because I can also go into the insanity and the perfectionism of controlling it. Is this the right decision? Is this the wrong decision? Have I taken on too much? And I shared in a meeting recently that I would love for this year to be a year where I allow myself to dream and go out into the world a bit more and make some mistakes and fall on my face and be okay and forgive myself and go out and dream a bit more. Because, yeah, the reality is I'm still really scared of mistakes. And it's funny because I said that in a meeting, and the next day I made like a really made a really tiny mistake. In terms of, I do service on a meeting, and I logged out. I got locked out of a Gmail account that I am, and couldn't access the Zoom. And the self-punishment, guys, the self-loathing, and the fear, and the like, everyone's going to be angry with me, and the meeting isn't going to be able to happen, and people will probably pick up because of it, and maybe people will die. Like, my over-responsibility from one tiny mistake is really real. It can send me really spiraling into that shame and fear. And you know what? I got to ask for help. I got to reach out on the committee thread. I got to ask for some help, and people showed up, and we solved it together. But yeah, that is definitely something that I have learned in these rooms, because I came here thinking that I needed to have all the answers. I needed to know everything, that people would be angry if I asked for help. You know, picking up the phone in those early days was so terrifying. I would write down a little script of what to say and what to ask people. It just felt so foreign to me. I was really used to being an offerer of help. I was like a compulsive helper in my using addiction. But to ask for help was so new, and that's a muscle that I get to continue to work. And I remember people in those early days saying to me, "You phoning me helps me more than you'll know, but you'll find out one day." And I really understand that now when I get the chance to speak to newcomers, you know, people in that place that I know and recognize so well, that wasn't actually that long ago for me, that give me such a sense of perspective. And sometimes come up with like unbelievable wisdom, that back to basic stuff, because I have a brain that can overcomplicate everything. And they can just help me land in the gratitude for being clean today, for being in my life today, for all of the stuff that I've learned today. So yeah, I am really grateful for that tool that I've learned here of asking for help, that I get to practice imperfectly on a daily basis. Yeah, my sponsor has helped me with that so much. She is an extraordinary human in my life. I've never had a relationship like the one that I have with her. She's taught me so much, including about boundaries. She has really strong boundaries. I remember the first time that she set me a 3-minute voice note boundary, and that told me that I was only allowed to put 12 things on my gratitude list. And she did it with such compassion. But that's how I've learned to do the same thing now. You know, I came in here thinking that if I said, told people what I needed, I mean, I wasn't even present for what I needed, but if I asked for what I needed, then people would leave, like my needs were an assault on them. And now I have learned that boundaries are so necessary for me to be well. I heard someone say in a meeting recently that compassion without boundaries is self-destruction, and codependency is so much a part of my stuff. Like, it's all over my step 4 and 5, that self-abandonment that I learned so very young and I carried on well into my adulthood. And so learning to say no, and learning to say not yet, and learning to say I need a break, and learning to say not today, has been one of the kindest lessons that I've learned here. And I really learned that from my sponsor modeling it for me. And the way that she offers help to me too, she only ever shares from her own experience. And if she doesn't know something, she'll say, "Yeah, honey, that's not part of my experience. Have you thought about asking someone who works in this area?" That kind of humility of it being safe to say, "I don't know." Yeah, it's really amazing. I'm so grateful for her and the space that we share together. And this last year, I've sort of been in a step five for about a year now. I'm kind of coming towards the end of it. And I guess circling back to that beginning of my chair when I was talking about that division of self, the goody and the baddie, the perfectionist, the goody two shoes, the people pleaser, and the badass punk motherfucker that wants to go and blow her life up. I felt like I could only either be two of those people. I was either a saint or a monster. And I think that it says somewhere in our literature, it might be in the basic text, that we will discover we are neither as good nor as very terrible as we think that we make ourselves out to be. And that has absolutely been my experience with my step five. I was really scared of it. And actually, what it's teaching me is the many layers of my humanity. It's just allowing me, like, more and more, I'm allowing myself to be a human amongst humans, an addict amongst addicts. And when those voices come up, those defects, as we call them in the program, and when I came in, I felt so much like a walking defect that that language felt incredibly punishing for me. But now, because of the work and the gentleness that I from my sponsor, which I needed, I know that some people really need a kind of drill sergeant way. That was not what I needed. I needed tenderness. I have a drill sergeant in my head, which is relentless and tells me that I'm doing things wrong. That's constantly with a clipboard and marching orders. So I needed somebody who is tender like my sponsor. Yeah, just knowing that those defects, they're survival instincts that I learned from a really young age, seeing where those patterns came from, seeing how they no longer serve me today. And when they come up, you know, that having the gift of being able to pause, to breathe, to notice them, and knowing that they're all teachers in a way, that they've come to tell me something, they've come with messengers. And I can, yeah. Just by putting pen to paper, I can give voice to them. I can see them on the page and then I can turn them over. I can invite love in and I can make different choices. So many of my choices before recovery were made from fear. In fact, they weren't really choices. I was just this constant ball of reactivity that was running from party to work to party to rock bottom to using to escape to relationship. And recovery is giving me that gift of being able to slow down when I get in that speedy place, pause, come back to myself, come back to the rooms, come back to my program and see what my pattern, see what the story is that I'm trapped in and make a different choice today. And the ripple effect that that has on every element of my life. On my relationships, in my work with this family. And the biggest gift of all that I really didn't think that I came into the room for the relationship that I have with myself, the increasing self-compassion, the ability to meet myself more and more with grace. And when I can't, to reach out to someone else and have them meet me with grace, give me that kind of shift of perspective that yeah, it means that I don't have to blow my life up today or stay stuck in that cycle of relentless self-punishment. I'm so grateful for that. I don't know how much time I have left. Anyone give me a clue?
You're good.
I'm
Five minutes.
good.
5 minutes.
5 minutes. Okay, amazing. Thanks
If
so
you want a
much, Tom.
time, there you go. It's 5 minutes.
Okay, that'll do. Thank you so much. Okay, what would I like to share in my last 5 minutes? I think, yeah, I'm just wanting to go back to those early meetings that I came into the rooms, and for anybody that's new and in the room, and I had so many reasons to disqualify myself from this program. I had so many reasons to walk out of the door. I didn't use in the same way as other people. For me, I hadn't lost everything. I hadn't been to jail yet. I hadn't used particular drugs yet, but I was on the verge of using them. And I could have gone to jail for so many of the things that I'd done. And yeah, so I guess just to say, like, there is not a shadow of a doubt that I belong here in these rooms today. And that sense of belonging didn't come immediately for me because my disease tells me that I don't belong in so many. I mean, it can still do that. It can still tell me that I am more than or less than or other than, different than, separate from people in so many ways. But I am beyond grateful that I kept coming back, that I didn't quite believe that voice of not belonging. And the more that I've come back, the more I have learned how much I belong with myself in these rooms and in the world. And recovery is the kindest thing that I have ever done for myself. Yeah, I have learned more than I ever believed possible. And yeah, is there, I don't know if there's anything else I want to say. I guess, like, I would really, really like to invite trust into my own life in the same way today, to trust that just for today, I have enough. Tomorrow is like another country. I don't have to pick up today. Just for today, I have enough and I am enough. And I think, do you know what? I'm not, rather than carrying on rambling for more than I have, I'm going to leave it there. But I'm so looking forward to hearing what you have to say. If you didn't hear anything that chimed with you, there are so many other meetings, and so very grateful to all of you for being a part of my recovery and keeping me clean today. Thank you.